listening to the Brain Labor Report.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on Social Security. Now, thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war.
Oh, what a war on the workers, I'm telling you. And it's time we started calling the shots. Thank you, Ann Feeney, starting off another edition of the Brain Labor Report. This is Wes Brain. I'm host of the show.
And this is Jason Houck. I'm the engineer.
Coming to you on May 22nd, 2013. And this show is not about the weather, but I got to tell you, there were ice crystals on my back deck this morning, Jason. I hope the tomatoes aren't hurt. I mean, just barely did it hit freezing. It did. Here in Ashland, Oregon, the average freeze is actually May 8th. Today is May 22nd. So, boy, put that in your pipe and smoke it. I'm telling you. Okay. The show, yeah, the Brain Labor Report. We're not about the weather. We are about the great divide in the United States of America. It's huge. It's like the Grand Canyon. It's the divide between those who have and those who don't. It's a divide that so many good, hardworking people find themselves falling into. And by gosh, in the richest country on the planet, I think we have here, the United States of America, we have so many people falling through the cracks. So the Brain Labor Report focuses on the struggles of people, ordinary working people. We call them the working class. We talk about we talk about foreclosures that are illegally brought on us by the corporate banking structure. We talk about a healthcare system that is absolutely inhumane. We believe healthcare is a human right. We talk about an unacceptable unemployment rate that's brought on by privatizing and sending our jobs. Remember, a made in America? Sending those jobs overseas. These are things we talk about. We talk about light at the end of the tunnel, too, because there's a lot of good, hardworking people. In fact, we're going to be talking to some of them today as guests on the Brain Labor Report. You ever heard of Oregon Rural Action? Stay tuned, okay? Always near the top of our hour-long program, we bring you the Workers' Independent News. Out of Madison, Wisconsin, here's 3 minutes of cutting-edge news. Folks, KSKQ is where you can hear this. Mainstream media doesn't cover Workers' Independent News. So for Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013, here is the Workers' Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFSCME Medical Center workers in California began a two-day strike Tuesday. Jesse Russell reports.
All five University of California Medical Centers saw picket lines on Tuesday as workers walked off the job over stalled contract negotiations. It was the first day of a planned two-day strike brought on by employees demanding a contract that includes fair wages and an increased commitment to patient safety. Margaret Mann is a hospital lab tech at UC San Francisco's Medical Center.
Since, I think, last June, we've been working without a contract, and the university is, they're just not paying attention to any of our concerns at all.
Representatives of the UC system have criticized the strike action as putting patients in the middle of a labor dispute. But Mann said they took the action as a last resort.
You know, as far as the patients in there today, we have to deal with them 365 days a year. You know, we care about them 365 days a year. And if this is the only way we can make things better, and this is the action of last resort, we have tried everything. Nobody wanted to do this.
The workers are represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 3299. But they weren't the only workers on the strike lines. The University Professional and Technical Workers, Local 9119, launched a sympathy strike and marched along with their co-workers. UPT workers said they shared the same concerns regarding rising executive salaries, while workers are asked to accept concessions to patient care.
In Washington, D.C., federal workers protesting low wages walked off their jobs at several federal buildings. The workers have organized as Good Jobs Nation. They work for federal contractors at the Ronald Reagan Building, the Smithsonian, Union Station, and other buildings. The federal government is the largest employer of low-wage workers in America, with some 2 million low-wage workers working for the government through contractors paid for by tax money. Those workers want a real living wage. Low-wage workers are rising up, fighting for living wages and union organizing rights all over America, from New York City to Walmart warehouses in California and Chicago to Detroit, St. Louis, and Milwaukee, to name just a few. Jennifer Epps Addison is with the Milwaukee Workers Organizing Committee.
It really just comes from everyday working people who are doing everything they can and doing everything right, doing exactly what they were told they're supposed to do, and yet at the end of the week or at the end of the month, don't have enough to meet their basic needs. They can't keep their rent paid, they can't keep their lights on, and most importantly, they can't take care of their children. And so folks really came together and they started talking about their conditions. We were inspired by what's happening across the country. And so we decided that we needed to turn those poverty wage jobs into good jobs, into jobs that could support a family.
Workers' Independent News is made possible in part through underwriting support from the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You are listening to KSKQ 89.5 FM in Ashland, Oregon. McGuire Industries Engineering is a proud supporter of KSKQ, providing communication engineering, solid-state lighting, consultation services, and more. Contact Mike McGuire at 541-201-8777 or email engineering@ashlandhome.net. KSKQ thanks McGuire Industries and listeners like you for supporting community radio.
Okay, and the Brain Labor Report really appreciates the underwriters here at KSKQ, and going to play a song before we bring on guests this morning from Oregon Rural Action. We're going to be talking with Bill Whitaker and Karen Wagner via the telephone, but first I want to play a song Nathan Moore sent this to us. Nathan is a professor at University of Oregon. He's with their folklore program there. In fact, recently met Nathan up at the Pacific Northwest Labor History Conference. Oh, my gosh, he did a wonderful piece on Harry Stamper, the longshoreman just passed away recently over at Coos Bay. And, you know, Harry Stamper is very well known for "We Just Come to Work Here." That's the name of the song. It's really the anthem for injured workers. Ann Feeney sings that. "We just come to work here. We don't come to die." And Nathan Moore did a wonderful presentation. He sent us a CD of his band. It's called Low Tide Drifters. And with that, we would like to play the first cut off that. And it's called New Hard Time Blues. That's the name of the CD. Here's cut number one. Okay, New Hard Time Blues and Low Tide Drifters, Nathan Moore and his band. We're going to play them some more on the Brain Lab Report, first time ever, and we've got a couple other cuts off that CD we'll be playing today. I think we can introduce today, right now, our guests, Bill Whitaker and Karen Wagner. Can you hear us on the phone this morning?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, welcome to the Brain Labor Report, and from Southern Oregon down here in Ashland, we're talking to folks who are up in La Grande, Oregon. To get us started here, Bill and Karen, Bill Whitaker and Karen Wagner, please, for our listeners out there, Oregon Rural Action, would you tell us about your organization, please?
Certainly. I'll start. I'm the director of Oregon Rural Action. I've been here for 6 months in this beautiful place. The organization itself has been around for about 10 years, and really the way that I can, the word that I can best use, which is overused, of course, is a sustainability organization. We are membership-driven, an organization that serves the local economy, the local community, responding to issues that relate to us having a thriving rural livelihood and quality of life. Some of those things include food and farm issues, community energy, sustainable and just health care, and all sorts of other large and small issues that come our way.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a bunch, Karen. I wanna introduce to our listeners the Brain Labor Report. Besides Jason, our engineer here in the studio, we have Rich Rohde, and Rich is Rich. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Wes.
Yeah.
Glad to meet you guys out in Eastern Oregon too. Thanks.
We want to learn about more about today. That's really our focus, Oregon Rural Action, and learning more about your now 10-year-old organization. Bill Whitaker, anything else you want to add as we kind of start with the big picture? And I hope we can get to some of the programs you're working on, too. We can discuss them in detail.
Great, Wes. We're a grassroots community organizing organization, and basically ORA members identify the issues that they're most concerned about and are affecting all of us. They develop strategies and campaigns to make the changes that we want to see. So we're really working on promoting social justice, agricultural and economic sustainability, and stewardship of Eastern Oregon's land, air, and water.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's a big project to take on. And what about rural organizing? How is it different from maybe organizing in the big cities?
There's lots of different challenges, I think, that we face, some that are positive and others that are really reflective of the geography in which we live. There's wide, broad distances that we have to span with different communication methods, which are more or less successful out here than they are in an urban area. We have maybe a lower density of population, so it's harder maybe to get the numbers out that we need to create an impact on any particular issue. And people are really, like anywhere, I guess, busy. But if you're out working the fields or working the forests and not really connected in maybe as deep a way to the social media or television or other kinds of communication tools, our job is to really have to get people on the ground talking to each other. Organizers and community members really having face-to-face time.
Yeah, we're working, Wes, in five counties in Eastern Oregon. Union,
five,
Baker,
five
Malheur, Wallawa, and Umatilla.
Repeat those, please.
And this covers, as Karen was saying, this is a big piece of geography. So one of the challenges for rural organizers is being able to interact with people and bring people together in the kinds of concentrations that are needed to really make a difference.
But
our experience has been that rural Oregonians, be they farmers, ranchers, or eaters like all of us are really concerned about our communities and concerned about doing the things that are needed to really enhance social justice throughout the region.
Well said. And when you say region, I got to ask you again, you started naming counties, and you're talking about a big swath of land. And, you know, I think we're down here in southern Oregon, you know, we got the big metropolis of Medford, but in reality, we're more like you in La Grande, and I think all of two-thirds of Oregon is rural Oregon, than, say, Portland. I know you can go into a building and find a couple thousand workers maybe in downtown Portland. You can't find that many in some of the counties in Oregon. Would you list again the counties that you work with and represent, please?
Yes, we're in Union, Baker, Malheur, Wallawa, and Umatilla. And we say Umatilla Moro since those two counties link up in many ways.
Hey, Bill, this is Rich. Down here in southern Oregon, we have, like, contiguous counties that would look like they have some, economic and cultural commonalities, but there are still some real fundamental historical differences. Do you have, is that ever a problem there, or are people pretty united around the same kinds of issues and culture?
Well, since it's a membership-driven organization, issues may come up that are really specific to particular counties or particular communities, whether it's a nonpartisan commissioner's race that members are activating around, or, as you say, some of the broader issues are common to us all, and that might be something related to agriculture, for instance. If we needed a particular bill that we wanted to work on across the region, those of us who are in the agricultural arena and can really understand and talk the same language no matter what county you're in. And if you're talking about universal health care or health care for all Oregonians, that's a really broad issue that we may have differing opinions on, and we're not all of a mind, but they are issues that relate to everybody out here.
Very good, very good. It brings up another, we're kind of talking about demographics here for a minute, and then I do want to zero in on, you said health care, we'll talk about that, and some of the campaigns you're working on, I think, well, many of them are the same we're working on in southern Oregon. But the demographics, again, another thing that strikes me, just I wonder what your comment would be on this. Right here, we in Ashland, Oregon, we're 13 miles from California, and so that's another county down here, Siskiyou County. I find it really amazing how close we are and yet how little interaction we have with our friends just over the border. We're a region, and we're very much alike, Siskiyou County, as we are in Jackson County. That's the question for you. What about that in this demographics question? You got a big river there, but on the other side of it, not too far away, or other folks. What about that? Do you find the same thing? Do you work with folks in Washington?
Yeah, we really do, and we work with people in Idaho as well.
Yeah. Wow.
Let me say a little bit about our Snake River chapter in Ontario, which is in that valley that separates Idaho from that part of Oregon. And so but the problems and the concerns that people have don't stop at state borders, as you're saying. For example, a major issue that's emerging in that part of the state is related to hydraulic fracturing for gas and oil, fracking.
Oh, yes.
And so our members in the Ontario area, and we also have members across the border over into Idaho, share that concern, because the geology is not limited by state lines. Many, many other kinds of environmental concerns emerge there as well. Also, social justice becomes a real issue in a place like Ontario. A number of years ago, the Snake River chapter members became aware that there were many problems with discrimination against minorities in relationship to government programs.
Okay.
And they started a campaign to change that, and they were successful in changing the practices of Oregon government in their area to eliminate that, or to certainly make a major impact. You know, these problems are never totally eliminated, but it's a really good example of how people mobilizing can make a difference. And you know, and we're an organization that works with everybody in our area, and we're a very inclusive organization. So that, you know, that has its own challenges. Sometimes challenges of language, or sometimes challenges of political philosophy that need to be struggled with. But that's just part of the day-to-day activities. Coming back to the example of Washington, one of the things that we're working on currently is opposition to the a massive number of coal trains that would bring coal from the Powder River Basin in Wyoming all the way out to the Pacific Coast to be shipped off to Korea and China, largely, where it would have a major impact on the just on the climate of the entire world. And so we work with all the groups that are working in the Columbia River Basin in terms of that, and been very successful. Started off with five terminals that were being proposed, and at this point that's been reduced because of the public upwelling of concern. Now there's only one terminal that's still on the docket, and we're working to try to get that one off as well.
Wow, this is coalition work. Folks, you're listening to KSKQ 89.5 FM this morning. This is Brain Labor Report, and we're talking with Oregon Rural Action. And we've got Bill Whitaker and Karen Wagner on the phone. And tell me if I'm accurate. I think Bill Whitaker is a board member, and Karen is the staff director. Is that accurate? And I want you to tell us about your webpage. The listeners out there, please.
Oh, yes, certainly. Our webpage URL is www.oregonrural.org, O-R-G. And there you really will get a good taste and flavor of the work and activities that we're taking on, including all of the action alerts that are related to some of the rule changing that we're engaged in, working on different legislative actions and some of the top-down policy elements that affect us.
Good stuff.
I might just, Wes, just say a little bit about some of the action alerts that that are posted there on the webpage, and these are things that have gone out to our members over the last few months. We dealt with the Oregon State budget, encouraging people to participate in the Ways and Means Roadshow that the state legislature had put on. We've had a number of calls for action related to health care reform. We're concerned about genetically modified organisms, particularly food products, and so we've done a number of things in collaboration with our parent organization, the Western Organization of Resource Councils, which has organizations like Oregon Rural Action in seven Western Pacific Northwestern states.
Wow.
And so we've worked with WORC on the COOL program, that's country of origin labeling for meat products, as one of the issues that that we're finding is that it's very difficult for consumers to identify where their food is coming from. A beef cattle might be birthed in Mexico and raised largely there, and then and exported to the United States and slaughtered here. And currently, there's no way to know just what kinds of standards have been used in those operations throughout the life of the steer. And so the COOL labeling would make it possible to begin to track some of these things in a different kind of way.
Wow.
We've also had a number of action alerts related to the whole coal export and global warming issue that it's related to. At one point, we had a project to at Valentine's Day to send Valentine's to the governor, encouraging him to look very carefully and demand real environmental impact statements related to the entire coal system, not just the immediate town that that the coal terminal might be placed in.
Sure.
And so all of these kinds of things provide opportunities for people to pool their interests and pool their influence with the governor or with state agencies or with the legislature around the really important issues that affect all of us.
Wow, what an amazing agenda. It's like I'm talking to, we were talking urban and rural a little while ago. It's almost like I'm talking to an urban organization, the list of activities and that you're involved in and some of the programs. I want to get back to the coalition work of it all, because you make it clear that, you're in so many counties and you've got all these different issues. It is very clear. And here's Southern Oregon. And we do a lot of coalition work too. Let's push on that a little bit. Tell us about coalition work, some of the challenges, some of the some of the things that work too. Could you tell us about that?
Sure, I'll take that on. For instance, I think there's an organization that you folks might know called Oregon Grows Partnership. That's a broad-based coalition of agricultural folks, and being part of that right from its inception, we really got to see firsthand what it means to bring all of our agendas to the table and find the common interests and the common points that we can move forward on all across the state as a broad-based group with mutual interests and then with very unique and specific interests. That's the type of coalition building that has really served us well, and I think we're in its early stages, but we see lots of power in coming to the table and really ironing out the details and learning how to put differences aside for the greater good. We also work really closely with other state organizations. As you mentioned, we are as urban as we might be rural because of the partnerships we have. Mm-hmm. Working with the Power Past Coal association that brings people from all across the state together to talk and work on issues of importance that we all have investment in. It is really a challenge, and it's part of our democratic process, I think, to understand what makes us tick and how we really can conduct a civil conversation that moves us all forward, helps us create the progress we need and the change that we can all agree on. What else would you...
Let me just suggest a couple of examples of success. We don't always succeed on the on everything that we take on, but an example of during the last year through the Oregon Grows group was passing of what is sometimes called the pickle bill, which permits people to produce in their homes jams and jellies and high-acid foods, pickles and so on, for sale to the public, through whether it's through farmers markets or other venues, without the necessity of having a certified kitchen to do that in. The problem with certified kitchen is that most of them charge very, very high rates for the use that make it impossible for the small producer to really then be able to make any profit. And so that was one change that's come about through this kind of coalition work. We've also been successful in bringing in for the first time in many years a USDA certified slaughter facility for livestock into Eastern Oregon. Used to be until about a year ago that if you had livestock that you wanted to slaughter, you couldn't do that and sell it by the piece. You could only sell the a whole steer or a half steer or a lamb or whatever the particular animal was, because to sell by the piece you had to have the USDA certification. So working together with local producer, we were able to support their effort to get that certification, and now people don't have to truck their livestock to Boise or to several hundred miles in the other direction in order to slaughter and bring those food supplies back into the community.
This is Rich. I had a coalition question, and just one of the things that we have in common with y'all is that we're all in the second district.
Right.
And we're
having a hard time hearing you. Can you...
I'll get a little closer.
Volume up a little bit.
Is that better?
That's great.
Okay. Yeah, I would just, as a coalition question, we're all together, Southern Oregon and Northeast, in the 2nd Congressional District. And I wondered whether there's been any thought about, that really kind of corresponds to a huge swath of rural Oregon. Has there been any thought about connecting across that whole district, coalitionally in any way?
We do in some ways with the coalitions that we just mentioned. I think we've really encouraged our members to talk to our representatives and work with the legislature in meeting our needs across this big region. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, one example would be the coalition work that we do with groups like CAUSA and the Rural Organizing Project around immigration reform.
Very good.
Recently, ROP and CAUSA and several other groups sponsored a district-wide bus tour called, it was a march for justice, basically, promoting throughout the congressional district, and then actually some work over into Idaho and Washington State as well, the importance of justice for immigrants, documented or not.
Mm-hmm. We got to follow that on.
And so when the bus tour came through LeGrand, for example, the rally here was sponsored by Oregon Rural Action, and when it went down into Ontario, Oregon Rural Action members were very instrumental in the activity there. But this is a district-wide thing. The meetings here were held at Congressman Walden's office, and people met in several of his other district offices as well as a part of that effort. So there is, so it is really important to work throughout the entire congressional district. But as you've suggested earlier, it's a challenge because it's one of the biggest congressional districts in the entire United States in terms of geography. And so that's always, that has its challenges just in terms of getting people together.
We got to follow that on Facebook. I think there was only one person from Southern Oregon that got on the bus, but that was a terrific set of events, y'all. And, when they had the May Day rally in Salem, Ramon Ramirez said, in talking about passing the driver's license bill, that this coalition is transforming the political landscape of Oregon. And I just think that what y'all did up there, because of the changes in demographics that's going on in rural Oregon and the way that you guys are Oregon, I think it is really a very fundamental change that you're working on immigration.
Yeah. Well, there have been two major victories this year and related to that. The one you've mentioned is, the driver's license bill that provides it's not exactly the same as a driver's license, but it's an authorization to drive to anyone, including undocumented immigrants. And then the second victory was getting in-state tuition for young people who have graduated from Oregon high schools, in-state tuition for the public colleges, regardless of immigration status. And so, the coalition of a large number of organizations throughout the state is what made it possible to win those battles.
Very, very true. In fact, played some music earlier. We hope to play another song before we go out today. Comes from the Low Tide Drifters. And Nathan Moore is a professor at the University of Oregon. Bill and Karen, he's with the folklore program. And he picks up a guitar, and he's very much a part of bringing the history together and telling the stories of Oregon with folk songs. And so he's got a band. It's called Low Tide Drifters. And, he was telling me recently, Bill and Karen, I met these folks, met them up at the Pacific Northwest Labor History Conference. And I want to tell you that directly related to the immigration successes you're talking about, the University of Oregon, in their archiving, has just input all of the Pacoon archives. And so this is the great worker immigration organizing been going on for years in Oregon, up in the out of Woodburn, Oregon, the breadbasket of Oregon. All of those archives of Pacoons are now part of the University of Oregon, and really that's all the schools. Eastern Oregon is part of the system. So workers who can benefit from the bills you just talked about now and go back to school will feel quite welcome because the archives are included. Isn't that great work?
That's terrific. And of course, Pacoon has just opened up during this last year, a wonderful education center there in Woodburn as well. It's available to for workers' education and for people who are involved in movements, progressive movements throughout the state, to use those facilities. And they're really first class and wonderful, wonderful people and wonderful approach to education.
PCUN, listeners to the Brain Labor Report, Google that. And you want to see some cutting-edge organizing, much like our guests today. We are talking with the Oregon Rural Action, Bill Whitaker and Karen Wagner on the Brain Labor Report. Rich Rohde's joined us in the KSKQ studio, and we're finding out about what it's like organizing in rural Oregon. Okay, you guys, can't get off the show without talking just a little bit in detail about health care for all Oregon. By gosh, we had a pretty good rally up there, Bill. Would you tell listeners, maybe they've never heard about this campaign, would you tell us, would you tell our listeners a little bit about what's going on with Healthcare for All Oregon?
Sure. We're Healthcare for All Oregon. Oregon is a pretty new coalition. Began just a little over a year ago, and we've now got 70-some member groups that are members of the coalition, and also there's 15 or so local chapters in addition to those member groups that are forming and flourishing. One of the things that happened back at the beginning of February was more than 1,000 people arrived at the steps of the Capitol for the first day of legislative session under the banner that healthcare is a human right, and that everyone in healthcare, regardless of their immigration status, regardless of anything other than the fact that they either live or work here, needs to be included in a universal health care program for the state. We think ultimately that's going to mean a single-payer program that will save an enormous amount of money by cutting the insurance company's excessive profits out of the picture and replacing that with health care money that's spent to meet the needs of health care and not the needs of administration and corporate CEO salaries and profits. We're in Eastern Oregon, we began organizing March of last year, and we now have our Healthcare Reform Action Committee has about 50 people who attend meetings of one kind or another. We have a core group. We had a meeting here at the house last night of 16 people. Working on our plans for the summer, and we're going to be doing house parties and tabling, and we're having a marching contingent in local parades in a number of communities in Union County. Basically what we're finding is that as we talk with people, you know, the vast majority of Oregonians, say absolutely everybody's got to have health care.
Oh, boy.
Somebody at the meeting last night said, well, what if somebody says to us, who should be covered? And a doctor who's a member of the group responded, well, anybody who's sick or has the possibility of being sick, and that's all of us. I count myself among the temporarily able-bodied. Now, I'm 73 and so far in pretty good shape, but someday I'm not going to be in as good shape as I am now. And so all of us are in that circumstance. We all need to be in one risk pool in which we share the risk, so that any time one of us has an accident or becomes ill, there's coverage. And right now, that's just not the case for many people. There's 600,000 people in Oregon who lack health insurance, and another 300,000 at least who are woefully underinsured. They think they have insurance, but what they find out when they have a problem is that that their insurance...
Wow. Well, folks, listening to Bill Whitaker and Karen Wagner this morning from the Oregon Rural Action is very enlightening. And if you haven't heard about this campaign we're talking about right now, Healthcare for All Oregon, this is catching wildfire, and it really is taking off. HCAO.org. I want you to go ahead and take a look at that, because you're going to find in La Grande and in Southern Oregon and many places in between, there's a buzz going going on. Bill, you know, down here, the Mountain View Retirement Center is going to be showing the healthcare movie tonight, and there's another, the Ashland Senior Center is also listening, is interested in seeing this movie, too. You guys are using it up there, and I want you to tell us, well, tell us about the movie, because we're pretty excited about it down here. I also want you to tell our listeners, you and Karen, tell us about some of the innovative things that I know that Oregon Rural Action is doing, coalition work around health care and your campaign, how you're working with other groups. Could you tell our listeners about it, please?
Sure. Let me say a word about the movie first. It's an excellent film, and it was produced right here in Oregon. The filmmaker actually lives in Portland, and for part of the film, traveled to Canada to ask people on the street their opinions of the Canadian healthcare system, because there are so many lies and distortions in circulation by the insurance companies in the United States about Canada's experience that they really need to be countered. The film does an excellent job of showing the kind of virtually universal support for the Canadian, what they call their Medicare program, which is their universal program for the entire country. So it's well worth seeing, and I encourage anybody who hasn't seen it to really check out the healthcare movie. A couple of the things that we're doing here that are fun and perhaps innovative is we put together a form making it possible for local businesses to endorse the study bill that's before the legislature. That's House Bill 3620. That would create a study of four different ways for funding universal health care in the state.
And so we
took this form around. We've just begun the process and in contacting local businesses, and we found that local business people are really concerned about healthcare, not just for themselves and their families, but also for their employees.
Yes.
And I misspoke. The correct number for the bill is House Bill 3260. I think I may have misstated that before. But just in going up and down the main streets in our town, we found that business people are ready to sign on saying yes, they support the need for this kind of study. And out of our meeting last night, people are going out on the second wave of talking. In a very minor amount of time, we had 10 local businesses endorsing 3260, and we're anticipating that that we'll be able to add another 25 to that in this next second phase of what we're doing.
Wow.
That bill is currently in the Ways and Means Committee in the legislature, and we expect it soon to come out to be voted on the floor of both the House and the Senate. And when that passes and the study is carried out, we're confident that it's going to show that a single-payer plan is really the way to go.
That's exciting.
And so we encourage people to be in touch with their legislators in support of House Bill 3260.
That is so exciting, and as we're winding down the show, we are going to need to say goodbye. We're going to go out with a song here, and we are playing some music from Low Tide Drifters, and just before we say goodbye, I'll introduce the song a little bit, Bill and Karen. Every Stitch is the name of it, and this is about the garments we wear. Karen, about as hard as finding where the food comes from is finding the clothes where they were made that we wear on our backs, and so we want to end the Brain Labor Report today with that and the low tide drifters, highlighting them. I want to thank you and the Oregon Rural Action learning about your program today. Bill Whitaker and Karen Wagner, special thanks to Rich. Rich, thanks for coming in helping us.
This is great. This is an example of rural Oregon leading the way in our state.
Absolutely. And you guys are doing such good work. I want folks to be sure, one more time, the website there, please. People can look at it.
Sure. www.ruraloregon.org.
Sound.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, really appreciate being on with you, Wes.
Okay, well, this is fun. We will do it again. And, in fact, using the airwaves, the radio, using our telephones, is how we connect all across Oregon. Folks, you've been listening to the Brain Labor Report. We'll be back again next Wednesday at 9 o'clock, and good to have you with us today. Okay, going out with Low Tide Drifters. The name of the song is Every Stitch. Bye-bye, everybody.
Along a global chain of greed and pain, hidden from the public view.
For every stitch of clothing, someone sweats away unseen, while the tangled threads of justice unravel at the seams. From the slums of New York City to the streets of Bangladesh.